Hello, Susanna Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall. Today's story deals with the consequences of childhood trauma and, frankly, bad parenting. The Dog of Autumn Cannot Live to Spring by Claire McKenna, third prize Scarlet Stiletto Award 2012. There's something in the wind that hates the mail. A flurry of bills and remittance notices are rushed down the street, with the concrete dust and flower findings and swept up by dust nados and propelled off to the land of God knows where. Not everything is recovered by the limping postman on his freshly gutter-dented bicycle, so 2 days later, the lady who lives in the house on the corner comes around to ask if there is a linty coffee on the premises, and would she mind collecting the letter that had ended up in her lettuces? Settle says no. The dire pit's dismal history, meth lab, human traffickers' brothel, home to a chapter of the Finx for the 10 years it remained unoccupied after the 90s recession, is a respectably fearsome one. She's been a local the entire time and is not afraid to press further by asking this cement slab of a man with pebbled burn scars on his forearms if he meant no, Miss Coffee's not here at all, or no, just not at the moment. As of late, Melbourne City Council has jumped into the arty bandwagon and repurposed the jawbone of Edwardian brick factories into an artist's residence for people who don't care much about dioxin contamination or lime burns. Settle welds these sculptures that show up in temporary art installations and building foyers, his sole source of income, since he left Barwon Prison back in the noughties and gave up killing people for a living. Sighing mightily, he takes my letter on my behalf. The envelope is passed around to all the residents before settling in my brush pot for me to find that evening, once I've finished my allotted hours of community service. Trespass conviction. Nothing serious, not exactly like I was stealing anything that wasn't already taken in the first place. The letter is already opened, because all information in the dire pit is shared. From bowel movements to fucking, from money to bad dreams in the night. By the cold, steady glow of the gas mantle and the occasional sparks from Settle's latest creative efforts, I take out the invitation, feel the scalloped edges with my finger, the heavy card, the raised letters, and read my sister's name. My heart, that punch against the diaphragm, my breath catches, the memories crowd and clamour like refugees. Odette Coffey requests my attendance to an important event. She's forgiven me, I'm being welcomed home. So, a week later, I'm in a rented pantsuit because I don't feel comfortable in a dress, and I've scraped months of paint from under my fingernails and even found a dusty tube of lipstick worn down to the nub to smear across the flaking valley of my mouth. Not my lipstick. The colour doesn't even suit my complexion, but I've applied it nonetheless in lieu of a mask. I'm lost in a massive function room, watching an announcement from Praxis Pharma Research Division, an announcement that makes everyone break out into wild, ecstatic applause. Except me, because all I can think of is the autumn dog. I don't think of Sunshine as we first knew him, a big old shaggy Labrador with a goofy grin. Nor do I think of him dead, placed in a shallow grave after he'd been hit by a car outside the front gate. Although my memory won't let me forget the thump of metal against flesh, my sister's screams. She still screams in my memory. He's still alive! Dad, he's still alive! There's this memory of Sunshine's golden tail wagging as the first shovelfuls of earth land on top of him, but I can't be sure. Maybe I only saw the tail move because I was seeing everything through the refraction of my tears. The memory ground is soft. Rigor mortis hasn't set in. The soul has departed, and the nerves tremble and dance in the empty vessel. These are what set off Sunshine's ersatz liveliness. But I can never be sure. I haven't been sure for a long time, and I've come to suspect that the source of all my torments lies not in Sunshine's death, but that awful, unknowing place in between. 20 years later, my fingers tremble as the drinks tray comes past. My parole conditions require me to be sober, and I get breath tested every day. Why can't I stop thinking about the autumn dog? Like an aftershock, Dad's accident came a few weeks after Sunshine's, except he wasn't hit by a car. This time, fate came in the form of a pallet, precariously imbalanced on the tines of a forklift, and an unlicensed operator tipping the whole thing on my dad's head. A long winter was spent recovering from the crash injury, and Oda mourned more for the loss of Sunshine than our father. Then, like a dented parcel from a medical dead letter office, someone came home. Not our dad. The hospital switched him with someone else. Oh, they were smart. They fixed the stranger's face so he looked the same as Dad, but they couldn't do anything about the brand new scar over the left eye, evidence of their deception. The changeling father grunted and cursed at all things that were not there, was quick to anger for slights that only he saw. He broke Mum's nose one night after dinner didn't materialise fast enough and gave me a black eye when I'd said something that offended him. And that spring, during Oda's 8th birthday party, when he gave her the spring puppy in a rare gesture of remembered promises, she had cried and said she missed Sunshine. She wanted Sunshine. Enraged, the changeling cast off the fatherly disguise, had grabbed a shovel, run out into the overgrown garden, and in the lashing ferocity of a spring rain, he dug up Sunshine's rotted body, carried the corpse, still crawling with worms and maggots, dumped Sunshine on the table with the birthday cake, saying, "There's your fucking dog." The autumn dog, alive, alive. I have not seen Oda for over a decade, and for a moment, I miss seeing her while looking for a brunette. The blonde woman cannot be my sister. She's too thin, too flinty looking. But I look close and remember her eyes, and yes, it's her. She smells of cheap Yardley lavender scent, the kind every pharmacy sells, but there's an acrid undertone, as if a poison is leaching through her skin. "Linty," she says and hugs me. A genuine hug. Not like the last time we met when I was being ridden hard by heroin addiction and alcoholic psychosis. I'd stolen the money meant for her postgraduate fees, and Oda had called the cops on me. Her thinness is shocking. There's a yellow cast to the whites of her eyes. "Hey, sissy," I say. "Aren't I supposed to be the sick one?" "Nothing ever comes for free," she says, and tilts her chin towards the stage, where the company banners promote her like a goddess. I realise then that I must have seen her new blonde face on the internet 100 times and not known it was her. "Oh, all this your idea?" "Yes, since my dissertation papers. Since Praxis hired me. Cool, huh?" More than cool. For years, rumour had been percolating through the layers of internet blogs, through the media stratum, through the shale of social interactions. A life extension drug programme. A therapeutic puzzle box of replacement telomeres and antioxidising agents. Eye of Newt, unobtainium in a cup, 11 secret herbs and spices, some crazy shit. My sister's doing. Human trials and peer reviews were about to begin. "So, who's going to volunteer for a life extension trial?" I ask, semi-jokingly. "Never works out in any of the comics I read." She won't meet me in the face when she says, "People with no other option." With the completion of publicity photographs and introduction of vaguely familiar political figures, the dam breaks. The crowd descends on her like she's a superstar or a prophet who can already anoint longer life with a touch. I'm pushed aside in the jostle. But my complaints are only bleatings. Who am I to keep them all from Saint Oda? A pockmarked ex-junkie with dirty fingernails, shabby in her party hire suit, has no influence. One reporter manages to shout above the rest, "What are you going to call the therapy? What do you want to call it?" Oda's face changes in the attentive glare. The camera's lights wash out the sunken hollows of her cheeks and eyes. She reminds me of a movie star. We have a name. Not the final name, but a working title. Her answer is drowned out from the distance and the voices, but I see her lips move and know what she said. Sunshine. I don't see her again and the night ends and I'm ejected with the rest of the non-VIPs onto the street. No after-party invitation for me. Starving artists don't make enough money for a taxi, so I hang around Jollymont Station waiting for the first train. A parliament of die-hard Christian protesters remonstrated at the entrance of the function hall earlier that evening, and I see them again making their weary way across the railway bridge while trailing their worn John 3:16 signs. They give me money for a coffee, ask me if I've found Jesus. They stumble over the eternal life script, for in a matter of hours, that's been made redundant. In the grey dawn, I arrive back at the dire pit. The letter-stealing wind scampers about the derelict cement factory, sending eddies of lime dust down the street. At first, I don't recognise the slight figure waiting outside, feet stamping in the early morning chill. But it's not anyone from the pit, and the sexual activity that brings odd visitors has taken a seasonal downturn. Then I catch the wispy blonde hair in the streetlights. Oda? Hey, you all right? I'm cold. Can I come in? She's been either sweating or crying. Her mascara makes deep black runnels down either side of her cheeks. Yeah, sure. Here, through the door. Watch those welding hoses. I'm on the mezzanine. A distinctive acridity of hot metal and solder camouflages the general unwashed fug of human bodies and questionable hygiene habits. Settle lies curled up under his latest piece, like a pale hatchling watched over by an iron dragon. Most of the ambient light comes from a papier-mâché dragonfly the size of a Shetland pony. It's mostly by touch that I help my sister up the ladder to my loft. Her heels catch in the knotted wood. One clearly expensive shoe tumbles to the ground, but she doesn't bother to pause for collection. Oh, sorry about the light. Sometimes we don't have the money for the power bill. She murmurs something I don't quite hear. I set the gas dial on my propane lamp. The camp stove connects to a brew dumpster recovered coffee, whitened with a powder that might be milk. I cross my fingers as I pour two cups. The heat from the plastic mug in her hands rouses her. Oh, I haven't had coffee for ages. My oncologist says I shouldn't, but... She trails off, as if forgetting what exactly it was her doctor said. I notice that the blonde fringe and parting isn't sitting quite straight on her forehead. I wonder how much hair she has left under her wig. But fuck 'em, she concludes. Tough night, eh? Oh, she waves, as if an invisible wasp is bothering her. All those people, all wanting a piece of me, when I'm just about out of pieces to give. Did you know the paparazzi followed when I left the centre? I had to drive off an on-ramp to get rid of them. You'll be okay here. Half the residents are already wanted by the police. Over the chewed rim of coffee cup, Oda stares up at my latest painting, a triptych of decay. Possum. The painting subject lay on my table for 2 weeks. The perfume of transformation mingling with the other scents of the dire pit until reaching a crescendo of olfactory wonder. I painted like a woman possessed. Unfortunately, the other residents had not felt so generous. They'd ganged up on me and thrown my muse away, left 4 litres of bleach with instructions and threats of my limited mortality. Those bottles will be the last painting in the triptych. They're so angry and defiant, like the human need to control the final natural order, to not go gently into that good night. Do you always paint rotted things, Linty? I shrug. Oh, well, that's what the curators are calling it. Decay chic. It's supposed to be a movement, but I've not seen anyone who does what I do. Oh, what about the guy who does roadkill? Oda asks, for she has also casually read the art section of the Saturday paper and would have seen the ferrety little man who sold his Polaroid photographs for exorbitant sums. Fresh doesn't count, in my opinion, I sniff haughtily. He never touches them. There's no connection between the hand and the eye. I've seen you do corpses. I wonder if she's accusing me. All right, I admit it, only from photographs. Settle says he can get me one, but I'm not ready for that yet. Why not? Consent, I guess. Death is ignominious and intimate and vulnerable all at once. There's so many taboos associated with death. We hide the dead and flee from the dying. I pretend to be adjusting the bristles on one of my brushes, but really I'm avoiding looking at her. And we try to cure it. Delayed, not cured. Oh, nice story, by the way. Sunshine, the Undying. Why, I love that old dog. Well, after what Dad did on your birthday, isn't Sunshine kind of monkey paw morbid? She frowns, and I realise that she's forgotten Sunshine's springtime return, forgotten with extreme prejudice. She was only 8, so maybe her mind was plastic enough to throw up walls against the worst of her trauma. For me, at 14, the image ended up sandblasted on my reticulum. Not long after finishing the coffee, Oda tumbles onto the cardboard pile that doubles as my bed. She doesn't even ask if I'm feeling tired, which I am, thank you very much. I sit up and watch my painting in the gloom and wonder if I'll catch Possum moving the way Sunshine moved. A captured soul struggling against oil paint and canvas. After the Sunshine incident, one of the kids at the party had complained to their parents, and the great engine of social services ground into life. My bruises and cracked jaw, Mum's general inability to ascribe blame in the right places, made the department's decision easy. We were taken away, put into foster care. Oda was fortunate, because 8-year-old angels are easier to place than delinquent teenage girls with a criminal record for theft, public disorder and anger management issues. I was shuffled from emergency house to emergency house before aging out. In all that time, I never forgot Sunshine, laying there on the table amongst the cheese rings and fairy bread, the maggots writhing in bright chemical orange puddles of spilled Fanta. Every night I dreamt of the autumn dog, and every day those dreams were transferred to my brush, a conduit of decayed flesh and stinking horror coursing down my arm and onto stretched canvas, bleeding out from a reservoir of memory that would never empty. Funny that we had both turned to drugs, her with her biochemist's degree and me and my habit. I had used for many years before I discovered the brush. Heroin, pethidine, opium, meth, anything that could be smoked, injected, eaten, or sniffed. Anything that could shore up the defences in my mind to stop Autumn's dog from scratching past the soil and to the surface. I had been an addict. I knew what it was to have an unhealthy dependence on a substance, for fear, for reasons of escape. But Oda's drug is going to absolutely rewrite what it means to be addicted. He's still alive. She's awake. In my doze, I haven't noticed. The clock reads 8 a.m, time for me to go shovel some more wood chips onto council flower beds as part of my community service order. The whites of her eyes make half circles in the gloom. She's taken off her wig and we silently acknowledge what the chemotherapy has done to her once beautiful fall of hair. Who's still alive? I ask. I sniff my scattered clothes for identification purposes. Dad, I've been in contact with Mum. He's in prison now, been there for 20 years already. Something bad then. Even murder sentences rarely went above 15 years. They gonna let him out soon? Oda pokes her feet out from my blanket. Her stockings are ruined. I can see the bones in her feet. She's that skinny. Oh, I don't know if Dad will ever be released. He was done for some awful things. See, he remarried again after we left, and the family, well, we were lucky to have gotten out when we did. Her toes twitch in the ragged nylon. He should have died in that accident. He was just lucky. It wasn't his time to go. She reaches out for her handbag and I don't look directly at it because the unclean part of me, the one nurtured through long years of dependence, cannot look at a stranger's purse without thinking of the money inside. I have an article in here about what landed him in prison. Oda, I don't want to know. I grab her bird frail hand and hold it, so she can't take it out of her bag. He was a good guy for a long time before the accident. Getting smashed on the head only turned him crazy. Oda's grip releases and she pulls the purse back, clutching it against her chest. Her face seems to swim in the intermittent light, a look of disbelief and betrayal. He buried my dog alive. Sunshine was dead. He was alive. He was wagging his tail. He shook off the first layer of dirt Dad threw in the hole, but he couldn't climb out because his legs were broken. Look, it was a long time ago. My own voice startles me. I can't believe what I'm saying. Me, with the track mark scars on her arm and the back catalogue of rotted things, dismissing Sunshine so briefly. Before I can stop her, Oda thrusts her hand into the bag and whips out a wad of damp, folded photocopy paper. The light's not enough to read the articles by. Unsolved crimes, says Oda. 5 years before and after Dad's accident. Violent crimes. Mostly women, some men. Sunshine wasn't the first he'd buried. But after the accident, I guess he just got worse at hiding his crimes. That's why he got caught. That's why he was put away for so long. The police knew, but they couldn't catch him. He was clever. I put the papers aside. Maybe later I will read them, and then I will believe Oda. Because if my brilliant younger sister can draw together random threads of events, like she can parse drug interaction models, they must be true. He should have died, she says again, then shakes her head as if to try to dislodge cobwebs out of her hair. If he'd gone when he'd supposed to go, all those people would still be alive. Well, he's as good as dead if he's got 20 years locked up. I throw on the jeans and t-shirt I was wearing yesterday. Their smell of sweat and coconut sunscreen lotion is in turn sweet and disgusting. Look, sissy, I got to go do my community work order today. Can I get a taxi for you? There's a payphone in the milk bar. I don't want to leave. I grimace. The guys aren't too friendly about strangers staying over. But if I leave, then everything changes. I have to give my final models to Praxis Pharma today. They'll begin testing by the end of the week and everything's going to go crazy. The world, I'm the fulcrum that history is about to swing on and the weight is crushing me. Her sudden anxiety gives me warning bells of trouble, but I've spent too much time amongst the strange and quirky, the queer and neuroatypical, that I cannot make judgments on behaviour alone. Oda, I start. You should know, she snaps. Don't bother, I'll find my own way out. She makes her way down the stairs, rescues her shoes from the detritus of the dire pit, and just like that, she's gone. I stay up in the loft, suddenly afraid of what my junkie's precognition is telling me will happen. Cops are a dirty word. I'm going to get thrown out because I have brought the law into the dire pit, because they are going to look at the living conditions, the undocumented borders, settle welding over oily rags like he has no fear of flame. But they don't care about a shiftless crew of homeless in a stinking factory. They ask about my sister. They ask about our relationship. They ask if she gave me anything, and I give them the stack of photocopied articles for them to figure out. No passwords, no memory, media, like a flash drive, a disk. Nothing, I say. And even by their questions, I know that Oda's done something rash. When I go to the internet cafe later that day, there's 100 reports of a high-level corporate theft at Praxis, of a missing research scientist with valuable data. Without the data, the Sunshine Project cannot go ahead. Twice more I'm visited, a higher level of cop, a private investigator, and then an unmarked car sits across from the dire pit all day and all night. It's the last straw for the residents. I come back after a trip to the supermarket to find everything I own on the verge outside the factory. Possum Centerpiece has a hole burnt through the eyes with a welder's torch, which incidentally gives the work a certain veritas that it lacked before. Sandy Glass, the independent art dealer who fences most of my stuff, rescues me. She lets me live in her garage in exchange for Possum, for sex, and a 20% cut in future sales. I know I'll never be free of suspicion from Oda's disappearance. She ran away with the key to immortality, and I was the last to see her. But I know why she did that, more than anyone else would or could. I often wonder what her autumn dog dreams were like, of sunshine buried in the cold ground, eternally suffocating, eternally whimpering, undying autumn dog. I don't let the chaos interfere with my work. 10 paintings flow from my hand, a sequence I've called Happy Birthday, and there's no prizes for guessing what the subject matter is. 3 months pass before a letter comes to me, posted from one of those proxy letter forwarding places. It's an invitation printed on a card with a scalloped gold edge. This time, I haven't been summoned to a swanky event, but to GPS coordinates that lead to nowhere. Well, nowhere on a map. In reality, a rusted galvanized tin shack out in the boonies past Bendigo, a rocky destination that wrecks the suspension of Sandra's golf and makes her swear in percentage points. I catch the sweetish smell of decomposition before I'm even 10 meters from the unbolted door. Oh, the goddamn stink, Sandy yells redundantly from her car. She rolls up the windows and glares at me through the windscreen. I walk into the gloom, breath held. I don't know whether to smile, cry, or throw up. Possum's life model was pretty ripe in the end, but my sister is something else altogether. A stray beam of light catches her, as if she's on a stage. As a nod to vanity, she's kept her wig on, but her clothes are piled neatly in the corner. The shifting, iridescent garment of blue bottles on her skin is more beautiful than anything I've ever seen. Life upon life, even though odour is dead. I back out, my mind already buzzing with the colours I'll need to replicate that boiling surface. The autumn dog buried in the ground never had so much respect. "You satisfied now?" Sandy screams. "Why can't you draw dead flowers, huh? That shit was okay for Robert Mapplethorpe in the end." I stripped off and rubbed down with warm Coca-Cola to get rid of the smell. Sandra's small hands pinched my skin vindictively. I barely feel her. Even in the sticky aftermath, I'm anointed and blessed by higher powers, and nobody will understand, especially not Sandy. Oda's card is still in my pocket. The words are committed to memory, overwriting sunshine-seared nerves. If your guy hasn't come up with his promise, here's my gift to you. Make the most of me. Make me live forever. Oh. The end.
Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback, and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au, and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creative.